I'm joined on the phone by Alan Jenkins. He is the executive director of the Opportunity Agenda, which is a communications research and advocacy organization. Their mission is building the national will to expand opportunity in America. He co-authored the report, The State of Housing in New Orleans, with the NAACP and the Carwan Institute. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for taking the time out today to join us. Really appreciate it. Maybe we could start off by talking about what is the importance of housing beyond serving as shelter, and why the focus on housing, why the decision to focus this report on housing amid the many challenges that are facing New Orleans.
You know, housing has always been at the core of the American dream and this idea of American opportunity, that everyone deserves a fair chance to achieve their full potential. So your housing determines what schools you can go to, your access to jobs and transportation, to a healthy environment, to public transportation. It's really at the crux of things. And for poor people and African Americans, the people who were hardest hit by Katrina, it's always been crucial. And so, you know, tomorrow happens to be the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And, you know, Dr. King focused a lot of his attention on housing because poor people and African Americans had so often been cut out from the American dream of housing and home ownership. And at the same time, we saw that it was an important stepping stone to opportunity.
And the question of why the focus, why did you pick housing when specifically when there's so many other problems happening in New Orleans in particular?
Well, as I say, it seemed to us that so many of the issues that are in play in New Orleans boiled down to housing. In other words, if people can't return, they can't reclaim jobs, they can't restore their lives and start over. If workers don't have adequate housing, which our research shows that they often don't, then the rebuilding process is stalled. It's not to say that housing is the only issue, by no means, but certainly it's one of the most important issues because it controls so many other issues.
What was the situation for housing conditions in New Orleans before Hurricane Katrina? Because I think that really was exposed when the hurricane hit, the kind of inequalities and problems that existed. Can you talk about the housing conditions prior to the hurricane?
Absolutely. New Orleans was troubled in terms of housing opportunity long before Katrina. So there was a significant shortage of low-income housing. Costs were high, and there was a high concentration of poor folks in New Orleans. There was also a significant level of residential racial segregation and socioeconomic segregation. And so actually New Orleans was ranked by the U.S. Census Bureau as the 11th most segregated city in the country, looking at a wide range of major cities and metropolitan areas around the country. There was housing discrimination as well. And I think important to say also that at times in our history, the local government and even the federal government has played a negative role in segregating the city. So in the late 60s, a federal court found that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development was intentionally segregating public housing. In other words, they were placing public housing, concentrating it in low-income African-American communities. That segregation, in turn, put poor people and people of color, African Americans in particular, at the greatest risk. And so 80% of the people who were directly affected by Katrina were people of color.
And what has happened since the storm? I've heard that from many sources that the rebuilding effort has fallen far short of what was claimed was going to happen. The Bush administration, of course, saying that they were going to, you know, basically nothing would stand in the way of building the wonderful city of New Orleans back up. And it seems from what I've heard that the rebuilding effort has fallen short. So what's happened since Katrina in the year that's passed?
Unfortunately, it has fallen short. I mean, we've all seen the images of FEMA trailers going unoccupied and also not being very hospitable places to live. The reconstruction of housing has been very slow, and it's also been uneven. And so right now there's a stark shortage, really a crisis, in the lack of affordable housing, and the number of people seeking FEMA assistance, seeking trailers, has actually increased in the last few months since March rather than decreased. And remarkably, HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, recently announced that it was going to tear down, it was going to demolish about 5,000 units of public housing, many of which are habitable or at least could be restored. And so not only has the process been too slow, but it's often been uneven and unfair.
You said this housing, this public housing that HUD is going to tear down is a lot of it's habitable or at least could be brought back to that state. Why on earth would they tear that down? That seems like an incredible waste of taxpayer money. Not only that, it's eliminating some affordable housing that could possibly bring back people who are living in trailers in Mississippi and other neighboring states. Why would they do that?
It's very difficult to understand, and I haven't been able to get a clear answer as to why HUD feels that these units should be destroyed. It's pretty clear, and a number of advocacy groups and others have actually inspected the housing and found that people could either move in today or that with some mold removal and some other things, it could be destroyed. The fear, of course, is that that housing has always housed the poorest people, high concentration of African Americans, and that perhaps some involved in the rebuilding process would rather those folks not come back. Now, there's no concrete evidence of that, but certainly the folks who I've talked to in the region fear that that may be the case.
I've heard that rents have skyrocketed as housing is there's still an extreme shortage of it. Can you talk about some of the statistics around how many people are still displaced, how much housing is still available, percentage-wise of affordable housing, and also this has affected the whole operations of the city. We're talking about public schools that aren't open, about electricity that's not working, and many other things. Can you talk about how all that ties in together with the whole picture?
Sure. I mean, there's been a large loss of rental housing, and in fact, a significant percentage of the housing that was destroyed in Katrina was available for very low-income folks. It was at rents that they could at that time afford. The rates have gone up significantly. So in New Orleans now, a two-bedroom apartment that rented for $661 a month in 2004 is now $940 in 2006. And as you can imagine, that's simply unaffordable for the vast majority of people who were displaced by Katrina who are struggling to restart their lives. It's just not working. At the same time, housing for reconstruction laborers is severely limited. A lot of people, according to a recent report, are living near construction sites in hotel rooms, shared apartments. Some are living in cars or at work sites. And on average, construction workers are sharing housing with five other people on average. And just as importantly, the slow rebuilding in New Orleans has also, you know, the rebuilding of housing has also accompanied a slow rebuilding of community, of the services, the support systems that you need to restart your life. So in June of this year, only 18% of public schools had reopened. Only 21% of childcare centers had reopened. Only 17% of public buses were operational. Only 60% of homes had electricity. And as you can imagine, the poorest communities and often the communities of color with the highest percentages were most likely to suffer those kinds of problems.
And how many people are still displaced?
You know, it's very difficult to get those numbers. I mean, New Orleans had about 450,000 people at the time of Katrina, and it seems that something like 200 to 250,000 have come back. But, you know, there really aren't very good numbers, unfortunately, on how many people are still displaced from the city.
So you don't know a rough percentage of how many have been able to return?
Well, you know, we have numbers in our report about trailers, you know, trailer requests and the like. But really, you know, unfortunately, it's been very difficult to get from FEMA and other officials a hard number on how many people they even believe are still displaced in the city.
What is the problem here? Why is this? Why are so many public schools still closed, hospitals still not open, electricity not functioning? This enormous lack of affordable housing, what is the structure or the lack of structure or whatever? What has caused this situation?
We believe it's really a failure to prioritize opportunity as a value and also a failure to invest in strong government systems that can keep the ladder of opportunity sturdy. And so, as a practical matter, what I mean by that is the decision of HUD with respect to public housing is a good example. But similarly, very, very small proportion of federal funding that's come in through community development block grants, for instance, has been dedicated to very low-income housing. There have not been adequate vouchers. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the Section 8 program by which low-income folks can receive a voucher that they can use almost anywhere to rent housing. And so there's a subsidy that goes along with that. And so not only does it address people's immediate housing needs, but it also means that you have more mixed income housing, which a ton of research shows is a more effective way to develop healthy communities. A lot of the lessons of the past, experience that we have from past disasters and experiences, hasn't been applied in this situation. And most importantly, we haven't invested in a strong role for government. So let me give you a quick example that relates to FEMA. FEMA, as you may remember, used to be a full cabinet-level agency. In the mid-90s, the head of FEMA, James Lee Witt, was an experienced emergency response expert. He had come from Arkansas. And the agency was well-staffed, and it was well-prepared. And so when the Oklahoma City bombing happened in the mid-90s, when Hurricane Fran happened in the mid-90s, the Northridge earthquake, the response by FEMA was very successful and really lived up to federal standards. Since that time, FEMA has been subsumed within the Department of Homeland Security. It's understaffed. There are a lot of positions open. We know that it has not of late been, or at least at the time of Katrina, was not led by an experienced disaster response person. And that dynamic of disinvesting in federal government's built to address problems and expand opportunity really has played out in a lot of different agencies. So housing and urban development is another good example of that, where this is really the time for HUD to shine. This is what HUD does, to provide housing for low-income people and to encourage the development of low-income housing for everyone and to protect fair housing, and yet that hasn't happened.
What about corporate influence? Has that been an issue in the situation in terms of contracts and such?
Well, there's certainly a lot of evidence that contracting has not been done above board, that it hasn't been through a fully competitive process. Early on, it was very difficult for small local contractors in the Gulf Coast to compete, which, in addition to shutting out people who knew the terrain, was also having a disparate impact on minority-run businesses. And so that's part of the analysis. But even insofar as the private sector is always going to be part of the partnership that builds and rebuilds, but it's the government's responsibility to set the rules of the game and to enforce them.
And who makes these decisions within the government about reconstruction, about who gets the contracts, and how it's all done, and how much public input and participation is happening in that?
Well, it's an array of decision makers, as you can imagine. So at the New Orleans level, the city government has a plan. The state of Louisiana has a plan, and the federal government has multiple agencies that are working on this set of issues. And so, there's been sometimes a good level of collaboration and cooperation, sometimes less. But certainly, I think there has not been a single-minded focus on allowing people to return and ensuring that people, no matter what their race, no matter what their income level, have an equal right of return.
Why hasn't there been a focus on that? Is it because the public hasn't had enough input? The voice of those displaced people has not been heard enough? Or is it partly some kind of institutional racism? What's happening?
Well,
classism?
I think it's a combination of factors. Certainly, local folks have not had the input that they want or deserve into the process. And so when you go down to the Gulf, you hear people say over and over again, you know, we haven't been consulted, we haven't been part of these conversations. They're, you know, often happen behind closed doors. And so that's a significant part of it. I think, you know, also it really has to do with what, you know, many are calling Katrina fatigue. People would rather move on, and there's been a lack of priority, I think, particularly on the part of the federal government, to really ensure that this process happens in a way that embodies the highest values of opportunity. And, you know, that's, as I say, an issue not only of conditions, but of values. It's about the kind of country we want to be. And it's very important, I think, at this crossroads, at the one-year anniversary, that, you know, government reclaim the mantle and make sure that we're a land of opportunity and not just islands of opportunity in a sea of disadvantage.
There was a lot of fear expressed shortly after Katrina that the reconstruction might end up basically building a kind of Disneyland in the place of New Orleans, putting in, I don't know, I guess kind of a playland for yuppies or something. And there was also, as you mentioned just now, a lot of people feeling very shut out of the process. There's also been folks who've experienced some serious discrimination trying to get back to their lives, trying to find housing, trying to get loans. This kind of thing is institutional classism and racism in this country, and in particular in this situation, part of the problem.
It's a significant part of the problem. What the National Fair Housing Alliance, for example, did a study that's described in our report, and they essentially used testers. So in other words, they worked with people who had been evacuated from Katrina, and they had white and black callers and rental home seekers who had identical qualifications seek the same housing. What they found was that a stunning two-thirds of African-Americans seeking housing received less favorable treatment in their search for housing. So in other words, they either weren't told about apartments that the white testers were told about, or they received less information, or they were asked to put down a higher deposit. Now, keep in mind, these are people with the same qualifications. The only difference between them is the color of their skin. In one case, one remarkable case, white Katrina evacuees were given a room with a flat-screen TV as part of the deal, and told that it was specifically because they were Katrina evacuees. No mention made of that to African Americans seeking the same housing, and those people were asked to put down a higher security deposit. So issues of race unquestionably are playing out in this process.
I'm speaking with Alan Jenkins. He's the executive director of the Opportunity Agenda, which is a communications research and advocacy organization. Their mission is building the national will to expand opportunity in America. He co-authored the report, The State of Housing in New Orleans, with the NAACP and the Carwan Institute. We're talking about the state of housing in New Orleans a year after Hurricane Katrina. Pretty dismal situation. What are some of the report's recommendations? What are some of the solutions that the report suggests to remedy much of what we've been talking about today?
Fortunately, there are a lot of positive solutions, and they all entail reinvesting in a positive role for government as a partner with the private sector, with the churches and synagogues and mosques and others that are already doing their part, and really prioritizing opportunity, this American value, the idea that we all deserve a fair chance to achieve our full potential and to start over. And so we have a number of solutions recommended in the report, some of which are short-term and some of which are longer-term. So in the shorter term, for example, significantly increasing the number of housing vouchers. I mentioned the Section 8 program that allows people to find housing, and really prioritizing access to affordable housing. So taking a look, and that this it would entail HUD working with local agencies, state and New Orleans agencies, to look at what low-income housing actually costs in the region, not only concentrated in the same places where folks had been segregated in the past, but across New Orleans and the region, and then significantly increasing the number and amount of vouchers that are available so that people can actually access that housing. And then doing some police work to make sure that people who show up with a voucher are actually allowed to locate on a fair and equitable basis. Secondly, is assisting low-income homeowners to rebuild. Although New Orleans had a lower than average, significantly lower than average homeownership rate, it turns out that African Americans in the lower Ninth Ward and some of the other places that were hardest hit actually had a higher level of homeownership than in other parts of the city. And so, but many of them did not have flood insurance because FEMA had not rated their region as a particularly high flood risk. And so they're really struggling now to rebuild and reclaim their homes, and they need particular attention and help. Certainly preserving existing federal housing, the public housing that exists should not be demolished, especially where it's habitable or could be easily repaired. And those federal housing units that have been destroyed need to be replaced on a one-for-one basis. And then in terms of the last short-term recommendation that I'll mention here, focusing vigorous fair housing enforcement on the Gulf Coast region. And what that means as a specific matter is the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the U.S. Department of Justice, who are responsible for enforcing the Fair Housing Act of 1968 and the Civil Rights Act of 1964, devoting resources, human resources, funds, doing their own testing and investigation of whether civil rights violations are taking place, bringing lawsuits where necessary, or at least filing complaints against landlords and residential developments that are denying people housing on the basis of race, and really making sure that the redevelopment process works in a way that really lives up to these values of equal opportunity for all. In the longer term, we're recommending a number of changes in direction in the way that the rebuilding process is going. So the first of those is requiring a housing opportunity impact statement that requires developers and others who are receiving public funds to show the ways in which their project, the rebuilding process that they're involved in, is going to increase housing opportunity. It's going to be fair to people who are at low income. It'll serve people of different races equally. It'll expand rather than contract access to good schools and jobs and transportation and the like. We think that's a very important part of the rebuilding process going forward. And finally, the idea of inclusionary zoning in the rebuilding process. What that means is really thinking about both in terms of socioeconomics and in terms of racial integration, building communities that are diverse and that really reflect the diversity, the fantastic diversity of New Orleans. Lots of research shows that that makes for healthier, more productive, more prosperous communities, and it's something that's within our power as a society to do. We all have to be in it together, but we need government intervention and a positive role for government to really set the rules and direct resources in the right way.
And finally, Alan, what can folks who are listening to this, what are some suggestions you have for actions they might be able to take, positive steps to help with the situation there? As well, how can they read the report and learn more about the organization you work with, Opportunity Agenda?
Well, it turns out it's the same answer to both. Your listeners right now, without turning off the radio, of course, can go to our website, www.opportunityagenda.org. And can both find the report, but also find some immediate tools for making a difference. So, for example, you can enter your zip code and find out what your local media outlets are, news media, and contact them and ask them to cover the real story of opportunity at risk in the Gulf Coast around the anniversary of Katrina, and to urge them to cover the positive solutions that are needed and the need for a positive role for accountable government. Similarly, on our website, opportunityagenda.org, they can, again, enter their zip code and get their elected officials and urge them, particularly at the federal level, to prioritize opportunity, to reinvest in a positive role for government that keeps opportunity available for everyone and keeps us all safe. Those are two tools they can go to right away. In addition, there's a very good website, linkedfate.org, linkedfate, one word, .org, which is a coalition of nonprofits, but also a lot of faith leaders, churches and synagogues and mosques and others who've come together to really both do their own important work in restoring the Gulf, but also to push our government to do its part. Similarly, the NAACP website, naacp.org, and the Kirwan Institute .org, I believe that's their website. So, but, you know, check out opportunityagenda.org. Use the tools. The anniversary of Katrina, we expect, will be the occasion of a lot of remembrances and the like, but we can also make it a forward-looking effort. It can be the turning point, the point at which we realize we had to restore opportunity for New Orleans and for our country.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Alan. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You have a good evening.
You too. Good night.
Good night. Again, that was Alan Jenkins, Executive Director of the Opportunity Agenda. He co-authored the report, The State of Housing in New Orleans, with the NAACP and the Carwan Institute. You can check out the websites he mentioned, opportunityagenda.org, Linked Fate, LinkedFate, Fate, FATE, linkedfate.org. He also mentioned the websites of the other co-authors of the report, the NAACP and the Carwan Institute. Check those out as well. And as he mentioned, important to remind the media to cover not only remembrances of the hurricane and the horrors around that, but what's happening now and what's going on with with Reconstruction, and whether or not that is developing in a fair manner or at a rate that is really possible and acceptable. Again, the title of the report, The State of Housing in New Orleans, go to opportunityagenda.org to check it out and to see what you can do to get involved. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM.